This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
China, Zimbabwe, and an urgent report on the world's future coffee supply. This is the Marketplace Morning Report live from the BBC World Service. I'm Anu Anand. Good morning. First, updates on U.S.-China trade relations for you. Beijing has called a U.S. bill to ban the sale of U.S. chips and components to Huawei and other Chinese firms that violate U.S. laws. Hysteria. This comes as the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times report that Huawei is being investigated for allegedly stealing trade secrets from American companies. The Justice Department has yet to comment. Now, intellectual property is key to the current trade dispute. Alpesh Patel, chief executive at Profinium Partners, says President Trump is right to pursue the issue.
He's always made it a part of their trade war to say, listen, we're not going to turn a blind eye, as has been done in the past. We're not going to be softer on intellectual property theft, and we're going to shut down your businesses, your biggest businesses. We're going to start arresting your people. And I'm glad he's taking that aggressive stance because it makes your country poorer when its assets are stolen, even if they're intellectual property assets.
Alpesh Patel. Well, last week, a Huawei employee was arrested in Poland, accused of spying. And last month, Huawei's chief financial officer was arrested in Canada at Washington's request. So as the tensions escalate and amid news of a Chinese slowdown, Beijing confirmed this morning that its chief trade negotiator, Vice Premier Liu He, is headed to Washington for talks at the end of the month. Let's do the numbers. Global stocks are mostly lower as investors continue to fret about the U.S.-China trade relationship. The British pound continues to hold its ground. After surviving a vote of confidence in Parliament last night, Prime Minister Theresa May has invited leaders from the opposition for new talks about a Plan B for Brexit. Now, news about coffee that certainly caused some worry around our breakfast table this morning. New research published today says 60% of wild coffee species are threatened with extinction. Aaron Davis is a lead researcher for the report by the Royal Botanic Gardens at Kew.
100-odd years ago, we only consumed one species, Arabica coffee, and there became serious issues with the cultivation, particularly the devastating fungal disease, coffee leaf rust. We turned to nature to find another species of coffee. It was resistant to coffee leaf rust. It was productive and had an agreeable taste. So it's a good example of how we've used something to shore up global production of coffee.
It is a multi-billion dollar sector, and Ethiopia is a country that exports something like $1 billion US dollars every year. So that's a country where it could potentially have an impact.
Yes, but fortunately, Ethiopia has taken steps to preserve wild coffee Arabica in Ethiopia, and that's very encouraging. Trouble is, even with protected areas in place, if you include climate change projections, then Arabica coffee in the wild in Ethiopia and South Sudan becomes an endangered species.
So what can countries, cultivators do to try and head off this risk for the future? How can they protect wild coffee plants?
I think first off, we need to look at those wild areas where wild coffee species occur and do more to make sure they're protected. That means improving existing protected areas and also probably designate new areas, but also look at the design of reserves. How can we build in a climate flexibility in those reserves? You know, we need to start thinking not only about human settlement and human encroachment and deforestation, but also climate change.
Aaron Davis. Businesses have partially reopened in Zimbabwe following the end of a three-day strike. There is still a blackout on social media, banks have few employees, and public transport is thin. Last weekend, the government more than doubled gas prices. They're now the highest in the world, according to globalpetrolprices.com, and that led to violent protests.
These protests we called for is all about fuel, skyrocketing prices of basic needs.
End of this day, maybe we will hear good results. People were not even happy. Even up to now, they are still in fear.
Well, Jonathan Rosenthal is Africa editor for The Economist. He explains how a country with no currency of its own can still experience a currency crisis.
It's completely mad. I mean, you know, if you don't have your own money, if you've dollarized your economy, you really shouldn't be in this kind of mess. And the background to all of this goes back to Zimbabwe's bout of hyperinflation in 2008-2009, when the then president, Robert Mugabe, just printed as much money as he thought he needed. And you had inflation reaching, you know, as much as 80 billion percent. And at that point, they dropped their local currency, the Zimbabwe dollar, and adopted the U.S. dollar. And the economy stabilized for a while. But what we then started seeing happening was the government was continuing to spend money that it didn't have. So it started creating these kind of synthetic dollars, these monopoly dollars. And it did that in two ways. The first was, you know, kind of electronic dollars. So you would get your real greenbacks and you'd deposit them at the bank, and the bank would tell you you've got $100 in the bank. But if you ever try to withdraw that money, the bank would say, sorry, we can only give you 50. We've run out of cash. And the government then went along and it started creating what it called bond notes. These things were supposed to be the same as US dollars, one for one, but those have also lost value. So you now have a situation where these kind of synthetic dollars in Zimbabwe are trading at about 25 cents to the real dollar.
So the new government has inherited this mess, and they're now talking about issuing a new currency. And of course, they're also trying to get Zimbabwe's shattered economy back on track. What are the biggest challenges here?
A lot of the underlying tensions in this economy have not gone away. The government is still maintaining this fiction that the synthetic dollars that it's created are the same as real dollars. But it needs to do a lot more in terms of opening up an economy that's really been bound by the state. You've had years of cronyism. You've got big foreign export revenue earners, such as the diamond mines, that are really in the hands of people connected to the ruling party. The money coming in from diamonds, the hard currency that Zimbabwe desperately needs, is not flowing back into the wider economy. It seems to be going into the bank accounts of well-connected people, and there's very little transparency over that.
Jonathan Rosenthal of The Economist, and I'm Anu Anand with the Marketplace Morning Report, coming to you live from the BBC World Service.
Hey there, I'm Bridget, co-host of Million Bazillion, Marketplace's podcast for kids about money. I want to tell you about our email newsletter course, Million Bazillion Academy. In this new and improved course, we'll help your kids learn about crypto, credit cards, and inflation in just 6 weeks. Each lesson comes with a podcast episode, a fun cartoon, discussion questions, and an activity that lets kids apply what they're learning in the real world. You can start at any time and work at your own pace. Sign up today at marketplace.org/academy.